This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. You can now watch our show on Free Speech TV every weekday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. FSTV is on Dish Network, DirecTV, and Roku. Alzheimer's disease is one of the most dreaded afflictions related to aging, and with good reason. The disease, which currently affects about 5 million Americans, is expected to impact 16 million people by the year 2050. After the age of 85, your chance of developing Alzheimer's is 50%. While millions of dollars and years of research have been spent trying to determine the cause of Alzheimer's, as well as effective treatment or a cure, medical researchers continue to be stymied. Now, a breakthrough study has pointed to a promising theory behind why people might develop the disease. Researchers at Lancaster University in the UK examined the brains of people who lived in Mexico City and Manchester, England. And what they found was startlingly high levels of toxic magnetite nanoparticles that are very similar to those found in urban polluted areas. Is it possible that industrial pollution might be a serious risk factor in developing Alzheimer's disease? Joining me to help answer that question is Barbara Marr. She is a professor and co-director of the Lancaster Environment Center's internationally renowned Center for Environmental Magnetism and Paleomagnetism at Lancaster University in the UK. And she's the lead author of a new paper entitled Magnetite Pollution Nanoparticles in the Human Brain, just published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. Welcome to the program, Professor Marr.
Hi there, very pleased to be here and to share some information with you.
Thanks so much for joining us. So tell us about exactly how you conducted the study. You basically looked at actual brains of people who lived in certain areas. Not all of them had Alzheimer's, but some did.
Sure. So some of my recent work, I've been looking at magnetite particles that occur in the urban air pollution mix. And because they are always abundant in polluted atmospheres in our cities, in our towns, the question occurred to me, were those magnetite nanoparticles getting into human brains? Because it's known that magnetite is chemically very reactive in brains. So that was the basis for me. I got some brain samples first from Manchester, from the Brain Bank, because that's the closest facility to me. And then I deliberately sought to get some brains from a more polluted environment, and that's why I asked my co-author, Lillian Calderon-Garthedreñas, for some samples of brains from people who lived in Mexico City. Yeah. So I want to emphasize that this study was not designed to examine a relationship between how much magnetite is in the brain and whether or not people had Alzheimer's or the severity or stage of Alzheimer's. The aim was to identify, are these external magnetite particles that we see in the atmosphere all the time, are they able to get into the human brain? So that's what our study has found. Yes, there are millions of these pollution particles in people's brains. Mm-hmm. So that then, you know, forms the next question. So what is the health impact of those particles that should not be there?
Now, I understand that it was discovered a few decades ago that there are magnetite particles that do occur in the brains of human beings, but they don't occur in such high numbers as you found. And they're also a different shape, right?
Yeah, that's right. So Joe Kastri from Caltech, it's more than 20 years ago now, he was the first person to identify that there was magnetite, the strongly magnetic material in human brains. But the magnetite he found is probably formed inside the brain. And when magnetite has a chance to form from a soluble source inside the brain, it makes beautiful magnetite-shaped crystals. So a magnetite-shaped crystal is an octahedral shape, a very geometric, a very angular shape. So we saw some of those particles in the brain samples that we analyzed, but for every one of those biogenic, endogenous formed magnetites in the brain, for every one of those, we saw of the order of 100 of these distinctively rounded nanoparticles. And these nanoparticles, they vary in size from 5 nanometers to 150 nanometers. They often co-occur with some other metals, some rather exotic metals for human brains, including platinum and cobalt and nickel. So in almost every respect. You know, you look at those particles in the brain, those millions of particles in the brain, and they are a striking match for the particles that are formed as airborne pollution, normally in the circumstances as fuel combustion or the frictional heating by braking, or open fires in the indoor environment, for example. So these are magnetites that are potentially toxic, that shouldn't be in your brain, that are so small that they can be breathed in through the nose, and then they can travel directly up the olfactory nerves and into the front of the brain. There isn't any blood-brain barrier to stop them getting into the brain through that particular route. So this is a real vulnerability that our brains have for this type of nanoscale particulate pollution.
So then just to clarify, we have a naturally occurring magnetite in our brains. Those are the crystalline structure. And anybody who might have seen like a hunk of actual sort of mineral magnetite at like the Natural History Museum, you know, might be familiar with what it looks like when it's in a large chunk, right? It's this gray metallic mineral that takes these crystalline shapes. But then when we're talking about nanoparticles, we're talking about the same mineral or crystal rather in incredibly small sizes, some of which occur naturally and others which are created during industrial pollution, the friction from brake pads, etc. Now, is it known, have people already studied air samples from polluted areas and found that the same kinds of round particles are found, you know, only in industrial pollution, similar to the ones that you found in brains?
Sure, you see, that's my background to this, because for the last few years I've been working on looking at these magnetite pollution particles in the airborne mix. And so, you know, that's where I came from. I could see that these beautiful, I mean, they are beautiful, they're nanospheres is the name that's given to them. So these tiny, they were molten droplets of iron that have cooled as they were emitted, you know, in exhausts or chimneys, and kept that round shape, that droplet shape. So they're very distinctive, and they're very abundant. Unfortunately, they're very abundant in the urban atmosphere. And also, you know, I keep having to say this, it's not just industry, it's not just vehicles. It is highly likely, you know, if you have an open fire or you have a stove, you know, that isn't quite sealed very well, you can be easily generating these magnetite nanoparticles inside the home, as well as, you know, looking at it being an external, an outdoor source of magnetite.
Now, Professor Maher, the pollution that we're exposed to, whatever the source is, we ordinarily think, well, we might breathe it, it might be linked to things like asthma, but we don't often think of us basically breathing something into our brain. Theoretically, how is it possible for these nanoparticles in the air to get into our brains?
So the olfactory bulb doesn't really have any defense to these tiny particles. These particles are so small that they are able to go up the center of the nerve cells and directly into your brain. One of the, it is a scary thing to report. So many people who have Alzheimer's disease, one of the first symptoms that there's a problem is that they have a damaged sense of smell. And so, again, my colleague Lillian Calderon-Gothic-Remya, she's identified neurological damage in the olfactory bulb, in those nerve cells, because of the inflammation that these externally derived particles have been causing. So, you know, that's the root. And normally, you know, particulate transport to the brain would be prevented by the blood-brain barrier. You know, if it was stuff in the bloodstream coming from the lungs, that would normally be prevented from getting into the brain by the blood-brain barrier. But at the end of the olfactory nerves, where they come into the frontal cortex of the brain, there is no barrier. And so that is a vulnerability that we have to that sort of nanoparticulate pollution.
Right, because these particles are so tiny. Okay, so what could these nanoparticles be doing? What sort of damage could they be doing in the brain as far as you know? I mean, clearly our brain seems to have adapted to a certain number of naturally occurring, or as you call it, biogenic magnetite nanoparticles. But then if you suddenly multiply that by 100, what sort of damage could they be doing?
Okay, so It's interesting. So the biogenic magnetites, because they're forming inside the brain, and it's a very interesting question why our brain should be forming magnetite. You know, it's not clear why that happened. But it's very likely that when the brain forms those magnetites, the magnetite crystals are likely to be encased in a protective membrane in a cellular structure. So that will stop the magnetite, you know, doing much harm. You know, it'll stop it being reactive at its surface. You generate all these extra millions of pollution particles, magnetite pollution particles, and they don't come with any, you know, sort of protective case around them. And so they're likely to. The thing about magnetite is it consists of two distinct forms of iron, one of which is relatively safe, which is the oxidized iron, and the other form is the damaging component, which is the reduced iron. And so the presence of that reduced iron, it catalyzes, it accelerates the formation of these reactive oxygen species, these damaging oxidative species, and that's what causes the damage and eventual death to some brain cells. So magnetite is, you know, it is known to be toxic because of its chemical.
So how do you, then what sort of conclusions can we draw? And actually, I should ask you this, is this the first time that researchers have found this kind of presence of magnetite linked to pollution in brains? Is this the first time that we have a lead that this might be linked to Alzheimer's?
It is. Now, I mean, so this is not, you know, the last word in this research. This is the first word. It's a discovery finding. And, you know, it creates a whole set of new questions now that we need to investigate. So, you know, we know that magnetite is potentially damaging to the brain. So now we have to establish if it actually is producing the type of cell damage that is part of Alzheimer's disease. So there's so much follow-up work that will now carry on, continue from this pioneering study, and whether that's looking at, you know, population studies, whether that's looking at laboratory experiments to identify the toxicity of these magnetites, you know, that our team, and I'm sure other people as well, having read the paper, will now be planning to do some follow-up experiments and follow-up analyses to actually check, you know, how much influence these external magnetite particles are having on human health.
So I don't know if this is a stupid question, but you mentioned that even an open fire could be creating these toxic nanoparticles that we could literally be breathing into our brains. But haven't human beings for a very, very long time coexisted with open fires and actually, you know, cooked their meats on open fires during hunter-gatherer times, the Paleolithic era, et cetera? And if so, wouldn't we have, you know, seen these sorts of particles in ancient, you know, wouldn't humans have sort of had these particles in their brains for many, many generations?
Yeah, it's a really good question. But of course, one of the differences between much older generations and modern generations is that we're living longer. And, you know, this is a progressive disease, so it worsens with age. So as populations achieve, you know, greater longevity, so the incidence of the brain damage that Alzheimer's causes becomes clearer. So, you know, our hunter-gatherer ancestors would have been dying off by the time they were 35 or 40. So we'd never have seen the incidence of the brain damage because they didn't have a chance to live long enough to demonstrate it.
Wow. So,
you know, you're looking at other populations, you know, as populations increase their average lifespan, you know, you will see a greater incidence of Alzheimer's as a result.
And so if indeed, you know, within some period of time, we do establish a link between magnetite nanoparticles and the incidence of Alzheimer's, the question then arises, well, how does one prevent this? I mean, you know, what does one do about one's olfactory system letting loose these particles on our brain? You know, I suppose medical researchers would have to come up with some inoculation against these particles.
I honestly believe that the best possible resolution of this would be to reduce our exposure to those particles. So we can think about that in two different ways. You can think about it on an individual basis. So if you said to me, do I do things differently as a result of having this information? And the answer is yes. So if I'm walking on a busy street, I'm always going to make sure I'm as far away from the curbside as I can get. Because even over a distance of a few meters, the concentration of particulates is going to fall quite dramatically. So, you know, staying away from the curbside. I'll always walk on the downhill traffic side of the street because, of course, when people are driving uphill, they're having to accelerate and they're burning more gas and they're emitting more particles. So always walk on the downhill side of the street. If you're going to be walking through a busy city, plot a different route. You know, don't go along the busiest roads, but walk along the back streets, cut through the parks. You know, as an individual, if you know that these particles are there in the atmosphere, then it's down to you to take avoiding action as much as you can.
And of course, there are multiple advantages to avoiding industrial pollution as it is, and trying to avoid Alzheimer's, if indeed this is a cause of it, is another bonus, I suppose.
Absolutely. I mean, it is well established that exposure to air pollution causes multiple health impacts. And so if, you know, one of those health impacts is actually magnetite-induced Alzheimer's, then again, it makes good sense to reduce your dose as much as you can.
What is your future research looking like on this particular topic? Will you also be leading some more research to follow up on this study?
So we're planning to do so. It's fairly critical that we get some research funding in to enable us to do that. But yes, we're keen to look at the toxicity of these particles in more detail in relation to brain cells. And we're also, ideally, we're going to look at the population-based studies, because obviously now you have a smoking gun. You can start to theorize which groups, whether it's occupational groups or where people live, you can start to theorize which groups should show an increased incidence of Alzheimer's if this theory is correct.
Well, Barbara, I want to thank you so much for your work and for spending this time with us. Certainly, this is a very, very promising starting point after so many decades of people looking at why this disease afflicts people. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. And if you have any other queries, don't hesitate to email me.
Thank you. Barbara Maher is a professor and co-director of Lancaster Environment Center's internationally renowned Center for Environmental Magnetism and Paleomagnetism at Lancaster University, and the lead author of a new paper we've been discussing entitled Magnetite Pollution Nanoparticles in the Human Brain. It's just been published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. We're also on Twitter at twitter.com/RU with Sonali.